Welcome to the Citizen Experience Podcast. I am very pleased to have Dr. Lugo Santiago with us today. I tell you, Dr. Lugo, I'm looking at your CV, and it's not often that I have guests up here that completely intimidate me with all of their credentials. Let me read this off to our listeners. Okay. CEO of Lugo Santiago Enterprises Group. Co-founder and chief futurist of the Institute for Leadership and Strategic Foresight, veteran of the U.S. Air Force, and thank you for your service, author of many books, researcher, entrepreneur. You speak three different languages. I struggle with one, so that's great there. Well, you know, let's get into this, dig into this. You have a great resume, right? So I want our listeners to really know the great work that you're doing out in the community and helping professionals and really organically growing leaders. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Keith. It's great to be here. It's good, you know, it's good to see you again. So thank you for the accolades, right? I think I always say that the reason why we are where we are is because a lot of people have given us the opportunities to be here. And right. I think that in my case, I have had the opportunity to be nurtured by a ton of people. I mean, who would have thought, right? A person who was born and raised in a little island in the Caribbean where people live la vida loca, right? In the, you know, yeah. In Puerto Rico, then, you know, go into the Air Force and then, you know, go and explore the world and then, you know, have so many opportunities to see so many countries, see what people do in other countries, learn from what they do, especially in my area of expertise and in engineering, process reengineering and improvement and the kind of things that our country does with other nations, and then get out of the military with all of that and then give it back. And that's that is a great opportunity. And I think for me, that has been my life's experience, and it's an honor too, because like we have talked in the past, is the opportunity to give back, and that's okay. But you just don't throw things away, right? As people say, we don't give pearls to people who are not going to appreciate them. But sometimes you meet these people and you share some of these things with them, and you see the transformation that happens in them, and as a result, they take that back to their organizations. They make the organizations better. You know what? I mean, what else? I mean, it's just such a great feeling. So I've been blessed.
Yes, absolutely. And your leadership coaching, how much would you attribute that to being in the Air Force, a veteran of the Air Force?
And my leadership coaching?
Yeah, in your leadership development and some of your training.
Okay, I understand. Yeah. So I think that so one of the things that we learn in the military is, right, is that no course of action is should be dismissed, right? Because a situation can come where you're going to use it. So you prepare for the future by first idealizing what you see the future should be, and then you look at the gaps. And we do that in the Air Force. I think for me, learning those things have helped myself, you know, self-coach and also seek others to help me. Because sometimes, you know, the truth is that you cannot do all things by yourself. So I think that has helped me being able to, you know, achieve a certain level of resilience, understand that I need others. And then all those people kind of coach you through some of those situations.
Yeah,
I think also being in contact with, you know, situations that make you mature a little bit faster than you would otherwise be. I mean, I think about our young men and women in the military. We ask a lot from them, and we take a lot of that for granted. So I think I put myself back in those years and how much responsibility I had from a very young age. And I think that helped, you know, get myself coached through those years. But, you know, very simple things, you know, that you learn that help in my coach myself and coach others. Right. And that is integrity. Do everything that you can to make sure there is an alignment through, you know, what you say you're going to do and what you do. you know, serve others, and serve your organization. Especially if you're in an organization, no one should be larger than the organization, not one person in the organization, right? It's a reason why you're there, to satisfy a purpose. And third, just display excellence in everything that we do. I'm not talking about perfection, but I'm talking about a mode of, you know, giving everything that I can and improving myself. So whatever I do, I can do it better, and I can teach others. And I think that has been something that that helped me, but also I try and instill in others when I'm coaching others into their particular leadership path.
So in your work, in terms of Lugo Santiago Enterprises, explain your services and the value that you provide, and kind of make that for our listeners really kind of gauge into what your organization does.
Yes, absolutely. So the Lugo Santiago Enterprise Group is focused on strategy. You know, basically we are focused on helping organizations understand the future. And I would say futures, more than one future. And then once we understand what the kind of futures that are emerging, then we focus on how do we get there. There are several paths to the future. One of them is we ask organizations what they want to do, obviously, after they have done some future scanning. We have helped them understand what is possible. We run them through about 4 to 5 futures at the beginning, where they're able to explore, you know, for example, limits to growth, you know, collapse, you know, discipline futures, and transformation futures. And then once they understand that, we help them see what kind of path they can take based on strengths of the organization, opportunities in the environment, and trends that they can have. And then the other thing that we do is help organizations based on the skills analysis that they have done that are needed for the future. And we can begin to look at partnerships, what kind of partnerships they're going to need in the future. And so, and in some cases, in other places, we are scaling technology. So we looked at the possible uses of technology as we see demographics changing, as we see social changes happening in different other kinds of macro and micro trends. And right. From there, they can decide, you know, how they want to achieve the future or move futures in centers of gravity futures to just kind of attract the kind of niche market they want to have for their products.
So when you say futures, I know we work with a lot of public safety organizations, and it's funny because I can't name the client, but they're really looking at new ways that criminals commit crimes, right? And they're having to put an infrastructure in so that it can be more predictive versus reactive, right? So now all we're hearing is artificial intelligence. How do you shift on such a rapid changing pace of the future, so to speak?
So artificial intelligence has been there for a while, right? It just happens. It just happens that we are talking more about it now. And matter of fact, we've been doing this since the 1980s. Yeah. If you think about Apple, for example, when they designed some futures back in 1984, they were looking at the several types of technologies, and they aligned themselves, you know, through a roadmap. And as these technologies began to appear, they began to acquire businesses, acquire these, and then they started putting them together and started using them. I think that and began to accelerate the path. I think what happens for us when you're talking about shifting, I think that in some cases the shift is difficult for a lot of organizations because they haven't been doing environmental scannings. right? Mm-hmm. So organizations start looking at what is changing in the environment, then they begin to do smaller shifts. I mean, obviously, right now at the where we are, organizations should be looking at basically at educating their people on this type of technology, not moving away from it, not running away because there's some amazing opportunities. Matter of fact, we are.
Not fearing it either. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a great opportunity for us to shape it. And I think that's where the great opportunity is for us to shape this this future, or this part of this future that we see, rather than having to move away from it. And so that means that we need to reskill workers and their organizations to be able to deal with these futures. They should be looking at different kinds of studies. I mean, I've been looking at certain kinds of studies because we were looking at in regards to productivity, and people want to use this as a panacea, right? Well, this really can make people very productive. But what we have seen is that AI doesn't make everybody productive. It really, you know, it's just what we have seen in studies is that a certain number of people have become very, you know, productive, but others have not. Even using the technology. And so the technology has really helped those people who have not been very productive, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it should be used as an accelerator. But, you know, sometimes, I mean, I'm looking at like the Actors Guild right now. They're protesting the use of AI because it's writing their plays and their scripts. And then songwriters are complaining that, you know, you can actually mimic a song by a specific artist now. When organizations are looking at how to leverage, you know, this technology or any type of, you know, innovation in general, what's your advice to them? When you're facilitating these sessions with them, how do you kind of guide them into really kind of thinking up and out versus at their feet and down with what they're currently doing and staying comfortable with where they currently are, right? Mm-hmm. How do you get them out of that mindset?
Out of the mindset of fear?
Stagnation, right?
Stagnation.
Anytime you're facilitating strategy, you have individuals that are reluctant to change. How Correct. Do you deal with the change aspect of futures planning?
So, you know, one way is to help them understand what they could become. Mm-hmm. And this is a great question, right? Because if I am comfortable where I am, mm-hmm. why do I want to change?
Right.
But what happens here is that a lot of people believe that things are going to stay the same. And so it's easier to stay comfortable. I was just talking with some of our cohorts at US Transcom. We were over there helping leaders think different. And one of the things that I was talking to them, we were talking about a root cause analysis. Specifically, we were talking about data analysis. And one of the things that I told them is, when we look at, there's two ways to go about root cause analysis. One is data analysis. The other one is process, mm-hmm. Which is effectiveness, right? If it's a measure of efficiency, effectiveness, I'm going to go data. If I'm going to measure of efficiency, I go process. And so this is what happened to them. They, some of them are used to staying where they are. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, even the process that is the most controlled process will always move about 1.5 standard deviation over time. That is as a matter of natural law. Imagine ourselves in the world that we live, which there is so much stuff moving, and there are actors in that environment moving your futures. So now what I ask them to do is I run them through different scenarios. There's, like I mentioned to you, there's four typical scenarios that I run an organization through. And basically, we make them feel those two futures, four futures. One is continued growth. This is a future where things are kind of about the same, and we kind of move forward, right? And so this is what happens. You know, this is how we see ourselves, and we create the scenario where they actually in the room and they see these things. Another one is collapse, right? Where things are going all of a sudden going good, and then all of a sudden the new completely just takes away the old, and now everything was taken away from you. How does that feel? Right. And then the other one is discipline. We equilibrium. We're trying to figure out. And when they go through that, they begin to feel the need for them to explore the future and have strategy and begin to change. In some cases, sometimes change slowly. But the fact is they need to be adapting as they move forward in the future.
Yeah, we've found that really, if you're stagnant, you're behind. Right. I mean, it's just like you were saying earlier about the standard deviation. When we're working with clients on our side, and it's mainly the government, we're looking at a lot. I think a third of the employees that work in the government space are facing retirement within the next 5 years, and they really don't want disruption at all. And I understand that. Now you have a whole new generation that are coming up that are really dedicated to policy, to social change, that are really looking for the next, great disruptor to happen. And it may be AI, it may be something else that we are waiting on to come. But setting that culture change is what we found is the most challenging part of this work. I mean, would you say that is what you're facing sometimes, or
yeah, what are so. Yeah, that is so spot on. I was talking with an organization about the first thing that I asked them to an organization comes, and we were helping a very large organization go through some big change. They were in trouble. Yeah. And so they call us, and we work with them for a little bit, for almost a year and something. And one of the first things that we asked him to do was to do a culture assessment. And the reason why I asked him to do that is because I needed to understand the organization's disposition to change. And so it's very difficult to understand if you can change if you have not looked at typical behaviors, specific 6 behaviors in an organization that we measure, to understand if the organization is going to be able to assimilate the kind of change that they're going to have to. And if they cannot, then we have certain strategies to help the leader in the organization align, so they begin to at least see the future in some kind of certain way. But what happens is the culture is almost like the DNA of the organization. Yeah. And so if it's not good, it doesn't matter what you put in there, it's just not going to grow. Mm-hmm. And so I just, as you were talking about that, it just can't be said enough. But then this is the problem. I guess the problem is just what I just said. A lot of people say a lot about culture, but they do not understand what culture is. So when I go to organizations, you know, like that, this particular client told me, oh, we've already done that. We don't need to do that. And so I said, okay, so then send me the results of your culture assessment. And so I could understand it. And when I saw, yeah, exactly. You can imagine it was not a culture assessment. It was a climate thing. It was not a culture assessment. That's the problem. Case,
did you have to do some initial teaching on what a culture assessment is versus, you know, climate or the fact that they really had no usable, actionable data to do any planning upon or any transformation on?
We did. So we have to, it's just like everything, all of us, right, in this business of educating people and educating leaders, and, you know, because we care about them and we care about their organizations. So we started, and so I looked through the data, and then I sat down with the senior leaders, and then I explained what happened, and I explained the goodness of the work that they did, right? Because there were some things that we could take, and then it allows us the opportunity to understand the market, the organization thinks it is, you know, what they're supposed to be doing, right? This is the market that I think we are in. But they could not see culture. So after we explained what we were going to do, the kind of measures that we were going to go after, the kind of the alignments that we were looking at, values and how these values translate into behaviors, and also understanding what the theory of success, what is the shared theory of success in among leaders and among employees in the organization. And I showed them some examples where I could interpose, organizational culture now and what the organization and culture in the future is, where you can see it in a radar type chart. They were blown away, and yeah, they haven't seen something like that before. And I have to say, some of these things are this is not new, right? Some of these tools are some of the most used in the industry, like for over 20 years.
Yeah, but you know, we're hired as consultants because we are experts utilizing and delivering the value that those tools are really part of, right? It's not their day-to-day job. And a lot of, you know, quite often what I'm seeing is very well-intended leaders are so, you know, caught in the inertia of their day-to-day activities that they really do need that third party to come in and kind of, hey, this is your reality. You know, I'm coming in from the outside. This is what you're seeing, and you're kind of missing. So the work that you do is very, very important. I want to ask you a question, kind of switching gears here. You have two organizations, Lugo Santiago Enterprises, but you also have the Institute of Leadership and Strategic Foresight. Mm-hmm. Are those two entirely separate organizations, or is it part of the same, you know, vision that you have?
Mm-hmm. So it seemed like one goes with the other. They hold hands, I would say, right? Because the one institution is into the deep consulting, discovery research. Right, the other institute, that's the LSEG, the Lugo Santiago Enterprise Group, and then the Institute for Leadership and Strategic Foresight is dedicated to skill building. Mm-hmm. So we help organizations, we're basically reskilling organizations, helping leaders change the way they think about the future and how they are going to prepare for the future, and we do that through giving them skills, problem solving. We help them, we certify them in some courses. For example, we do Six Sigma, Green Belt, Black Belt. We also do
practitioner
certified. So that way they can build capacity in their organization. So they're just not only depending on us. Because the idea of going into somewhere is for us to be able to give the organization the fire they need, so then they can go and do things themselves. I never believe that a consultant should be in an organization and stay right there forever and ever. We're there, we build capacity, and then the organization takes it. And then from time to time, we go back over there and reassess, pat on the back, or, you know, okay, you know, these things have changed. Let's tweak this in there. And it's more being of being a coach rather than just trying to be there forever. So yeah, I tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you why we started that. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the Institute was interesting, right? Because the Institute, we started that organization, me and my partner, Timothy Dickens, because as we were traveling and helping many organizations, one of the things that we find ourselves seeing was not a deficit in people doing things, or in some cases, and even in some cases, even having the motivation to do things, but there was a deficit in foresight. That's the one thing that we see the most in organizations. There's some people who can do great things, they can solve problems, but they can't solve for the future. And right. so because of that, they're constantly in chaos. And in some cases, we would say, well, imagine if these people could know a little bit about the future and then position themselves there, just like they do, I think in boats, right? Sometimes they throw the anchor and then they pull, I think that's called kedge, right? Yeah. And then you pull through to it. Imagine if organizations can do that. And that's the reason why we did it. And because of the deficit in foresight. One more point here, and that had to do with, everybody talks about servant leadership, right? Everybody, you know, exactly. It's everybody's favorite word. But I wonder how many of these people have read, Robert Greenleaf's Servant Leader. And one of the things that he mentioned in there is that he said, and I'm going to quote lightly, he said that foresight is the ethic of leadership. That's what he said, that foresight is the ethic of leadership. Because if me as a leader can see the consequences of my actions into the future, I would deal with things differently, right? I would train my people differently. I would invest differently. And so when we see a lot of these issues that we see in organizations, a lot of times, a great number of times, is because we have not exercised our own innate capability to foresight and then prepare.
Yeah. So I would say, I got a question. I really, mm-hmm. and I hope this isn't a stumper. You've worked with a lot of leaders. So what are some common characteristics that are uniform across all the leaders that you've collaborated with, that you've coached, that you've consulted for? What are some common traits that the best in class share? If you can kind of list some of those or even expound on that point.
I would say that number one is they had a passion for what they do. You know, I haven't, just especially in, we're talking about leaders in, you know, large organizations, at the head of these organizations, those people care.
Yeah.
And they have, I just have not met a leadership team that just did not care. And so there's, of course, different kind of human behaviors that are at play when we're talking about, you put a lot of, you know, high performing people together. Mm-hmm. But I say that the number one reason, the number one quality is that they cared about what they were doing. They care about success. And so that's a good place to start. And I think that none of the people that I have worked for or have called us to do something have gotten, been people that are, they're just selfish and don't care about the organization. So I think that's the one thing I would say. The other one, I think that, I guess this one here separates, right? Mm-hmm. The critical few from the trivial many, and that is credibility. These people who are extremely successful, they were the ones who were aligned with what they said they were going to do. And their teams were very, very successful because they have predictability, right? They knew if the leader said they were going to do that, this was going to happen.
Right. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So as we wrap up, I want to ask you kind of list some best in class books, including your own, that you would recommend our listeners to, in order for them to really enhance their leadership skills. What would be some books that you would recommend? And of course, throw your own in there too.
So. Oh, okay, great. Let's see. You want me to throw mine in there? So So I would say number one book that I would say this book transformed me, right? Is a matter of fact, I've discussed this with my son, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Dr. Covey's. This is, yes, it's an old book. And I tell you, that's what, probably one of the reasons why I like it, because these are books that focus on character, okay, right? And rather than another book, I would say another book is called Futuring, mm-hmm, and I'm trying to remember the name of the author. And the reason why this one was a good book is, although I'm a futurist, I think this is a great opening for people to understand how to look at trends. You don't have to be a mathematician or have a PhD or something. It's just basic stuff that I think that was that I think helped us understand the future. And it doesn't matter what we think. The truth is that leaders have to deal and negotiate the future. And so that, I think that's important. Regarding my books, On the Leadership Journey, 30 Conversations About Leading Yourself and Others is a great book. And the reason I say that, because when this book was written, this book was written in very conversational tone. There's just stories about leadership and then what these things mean to us. And so I speak about leading oneself, then leading others, and then leading the enterprise. And I think all of us as leaders, we have to contend with those three domains in leadership: ourselves, leading others, and then obviously leading the enterprise. Right. I know in our podcast, we talked about leaders in government. And so the other book, this was a textbook, it's called Leadership and Foresight in Leadership and Strategic Foresight in Smart Cities. And it's, the subtitle is A Futures Thinking Model. And so when we talk about smart cities, a lot of people don't understand what that is, right, and actually the concept. So I propose a new concept, but what I'm speaking to leaders in this book is about 9 leadership practices for on foresight that every leader should adopt. So those are my options.
So we will promote those books when we publish the podcast. Well, Dr. Lugo, I really appreciate your time. I can keep talking to you. You're such an intelligent person.
Thank you. Actually
probably use your services myself, but and hopefully we'll get a chance to work together and collaborate, yes, with a client or two in the future. But for our listeners, how can our listeners get in contact with you through social media or your blog that you post? And I want them to get to know you a little bit more about you. I know 30-minute conversation is not enough time, right? So how, yes, do they get in contact with you?
Yes, absolutely. So if they go to their favorite podcast app, they could go to Leaders and Futures. We have a podcast called Leaders and Futures, and we're talking about how do we negotiate, how do we do this thing leadership, and how do we do this thing future. The other one we have, they can find me on LinkedIn. So just type my name, last name, Lugo Santiago, and they can find me there. You can send me a message at dr.lugo@leadershipandforesight.org. So that's dr.lugo@leadershipandforesight.org. So, likewise, thank you for having me in your podcast. It's always love to talk about these topics. It's so, as you can see, all dear to my heart.
Absolutely. You can always tell someone that's passionate about the work that they do. It comes across, and it definitely comes across with you. So I want to thank you again for your time. I want to thank our listeners out there for joining the Citizen Experience Podcast. We will be speaking with more guests in the future, but I promise you they won't have the CV that Dr. Lugo has. So again, thank you everyone for joining the podcast. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Citizen Experience Podcast with your host, Keith Scott. If you're interested in creating a strategic plan that builds a diverse, equitable, and inclusive workforce, please contact us at dei@klscottassociates.com, or you can call at 404-692-5552. Thank you for joining the conversation.